Today, we are going to talk about how Microsoft IT is using System Center Configuration Manager 2012 and SP1 version and leverage all its new features to provide our service to 300,000 machines, desktops, and laptops. So my name is Karthik Jaiwal. I'm a service engineer in Config Manager Operations team. I work with my colleague, Dharmendra here.
Hello, folks. Thanks for coming. My name is Dharmendra Thottagura, and I'm one of the engineers with the Configuration Manager Operations team back at Broadband.
Okay. Let's see what's our key objectives and takeaways. So early in the game, when we started Configuration Manager in Microsoft IT, we started at the very early stage, right from the CTP time frame, and then we built many builds within our, and rolled many builds of Configuration Manager in Microsoft IT. So when SP1 came out, we started from the early stage of SP1 too. So we got our hands full in all the features that are available in SP1. So we used pretty much most of the new features that are there, and we are going to having this service provided with these new features on all our 300,000 desktops and laptops. So we want to share our experience with every one of you so that you can get benefited out of that and see whether you can use the same kind of features in your environment. And also the lessons learned here is the key takeaways are like there are some lessons learned in each of these features. Whenever we do the dogfooding is an internal term for Microsoft. So before the product gets released, it will be tested within an environment, which is a term called dogfooding. So we do dogfooding for Configuration Manager product, and there are quite a few lessons learned for each of these features. So we are going to share those lessons learned, and also the underlying values between each of these features, because some of them are new, totally new for the Configuration Manager product itself. So we wanted to explain the values of it and then make sure you understand that and take benefit out of that. So these are some of the features that we leveraged in Config Manager SP1. First, the Orchestrator Runbook. The Orchestrator is a system-centered product, not Configuration Manager totally related to that, but it's part of the system-centered suite. So we use Orchestrator Runbooks. We'll explain how we use this in SP1. And Intune Connector, you might have heard this a lot of times in TechEd and in previous presentation, that we are using Windows Intune for mobile device management. We're going to talk about that also very elaborately. And Automatic Client Deployment, this is a new feature that's there in SP1, because whenever we upgrade our servers, we have to upgrade our clients too, and our clients are huge in numbers. So we want to have an automated way of updating the clients. So we are using this new feature and got benefited very much. And of course, we are using Macintosh Mac Client Management and application distribution for modern devices, as well as user-centric based app delivery. So Dharmendra will be covering most of the app-related topics here. So before we dive into the real features, we would like to explain how our environment looks like, to just give a glimpse of how our Microsoft IT environment looks like. So we have around 6 primary sites and around 13 secondary sites and 250 distribution points all across the globe. And we do have 300,000 clients, which is keep on increasing. Like, you know, as we talk, it's like 325 or 30,000 devices or machines. So we have all these laptops and desktops, as well as 125,000 mobile devices connected through either Exchange or through some other means. But we do have these many devices connecting to CarpNet through Exchange. But we are having plans to manage them through Windows Intune. From the user standpoint, we have around 98,000 FTEs and around 82,000 vendors. And we do discover all these users through user discovery, because Windows Intune and the license for Windows Intune is based on users. So we are using user discovery to provide license for all these users. We have six sites, six primary sites, and all these six primary sites are spanned across different geographical location around the world. So we have good WAN link between these sites and also to the Redmond, the main corporate site, where we have our central site. And also on the right side, you could see we use ADFS. We do use MSODS, which is part of the online cloud strategy. And also we use Windows Intune to manage mobile devices. We started using this or leveraging Windows Intune like late last year, and then starting to manage more mobile devices. It's still going on. We're going to talk about how we adopted to this new story very soon. So with that, I'm going to talk about how we upgraded SP1 in our hierarchy. So whenever we get a new build, we have to upgrade our servers and all the sites in our hierarchy, and that's a manual task. So far, we have been doing everything manually. So clicking through the wizards, setting up the configurations, everything was manual. It was time-consuming, and also tend to get error. Like, you know, when an admin fails to check a checkbox, it can cause some problem during the upgrade time. So we spent some good time and effort to automate this entire end-to-end process and got this totally automated through our orchestrator. And this automation workflow model helped us a lot in upgrading our sites, our entire hierarchy within 24 hours time frame. Earlier, it used to take like a couple of days or a week time frame, but we could upgrade our servers in a very good time span. So what we do is we do get the all the configuration, everything built into an XML file, and the admin has to just click on a push the button to run a runbook in the orchestrator. It's going to automatically upgrade the central, primary, and do all other configuration based on our standardized documentation as well as standardized settings that we already have it in the XML file. And these XML files are called build config file and task configuration file, and which are built into that runbook. And then which automatically takes care of all the tasks to be done and the server names and everything under build configuration file and do the site upgrade seamless and silently. All that the admin has to do is keep watching the logs and see whether the entire upgrade is going smoothly. Even if it breaks somewhere, the admin can go, has the power to or check the problem and then troubleshoot the problem easily through our logs.
We did a session on this yesterday, so if any of you guys are not following it completely what we are saying, you can go to the channel line and watch our presentation, what we did yesterday, how we are using the automation and upgrading our entire hierarchy. We did a session on this yesterday, so
right.
You can refer to it.
Yeah, that's the more in-depth session at the bottom of it. We have talked about very clearly about each and every pieces that are involved in this. So I'm sure if you look into that, you can get some ideas of how to automate that. This is pertaining to our environment, and we did share some scripts in that session through our SkyDrive. You can use those scripts, but test that script and then make sure you change that according to your environment and then see you can benefit out of that. So that's the server side upgrade. And we have to talk about the client side because we have a large set of clients. So we don't want to be in the business of updating the clients like every day and in a batch like through software distribution or some other method, right? So that's when we started to leverage the new feature called auto client upgrade. For that, I'm going to invite Dharmendra to talk about that.
All right, thank you, Karthik. So how many of you guys thought client upgrade is challenging? Okay, a few of you. At least earlier, maybe we did not release every year. If we release a new client upgrade or CU1, whatever, how is it going to be difficult for all of you guys? Is that true? So that's the reason. Let's run through what are the new features we have. We cannot do with the conventional features we have client upgrade very effectively because current features, like if you use the sub-based client install, you're going to upgrade all of your clients in one single day. And especially if it's a problem, if you're having a very high number of clients hierarchy, like 100,000, 200,000, we have 330,000 clients. We cannot just turn on the WSS switch or the sub-update switch and upgrade everybody in one day. That's going to take our infrastructure down, because MPs will be get pulled for the policies, WSS would be scanned so aggressively and all that stuff. So we were not able to use that. We cannot use the client push installation and or the software distribution, classic software distribution, because somebody needs to go and take batch of clients and create a collection and do it every day so that we don't trip our servers, right? So that's a very, very overhead task. So even that is not scalable. So we thought that, okay, we need to come up with a new feature that should let admins click one button and upgrade all the clients, but it should not take the infrastructure down. So that's why we came up with a feature called the automatic client upgrades. So basically, what it will do is that it will give you one checkbox, enable it, and say, I want to upgrade all my clients in whatever number of days you're comfortable with, 7 to 8 days or 10 days. In our infrastructure hierarchy, we use 10 days to upgrade 330,000 clients while the patches is going on, while patching is going on. So that's the number that our servers can take. So basically, I'll show you in the demo how the whole thing works, but the end objective is that to give one button which will do the client upgrade for the entire hierarchy. Not only that, but it should also do the lay down the appropriate language packs. All of you guys know that, like, Configuration Manager client has language packs so that you can get the notifications in the locale that the client operating system is on, especially in the Europe where we have Spanish, French, German languages. I presume that you guys use the language packs very extensively here. So the client auto upgrade also takes care of laying the appropriate language packs. It's not only does that. For example, if there are prerequisites upgrades, say for example, Configuration Manager client has prerequisites like Policy Platform Agent or Silverlight. If Microsoft releases a new versions of them, and if the Configuration Manager team supports it, how are you going to upgrade not the client but the prerequisites? So the automatic client upgrade also takes care of servicing the prerequisites. So this is a one solution that bundled at solving all the problems, not only are just upgrading the client, but prerequisites, language packs for the client. So how does this look? So as you can see in the screen here, that you go there, and you see that number of days section. You just put in the number of days that you are allocating for your hierarchy to upgrade the clients. That's it, and click OK. And everything systems takes care of it. We'll see extensively in the demo in depth on how this whole thing is working. But in a nutshell, you go to this place and put number of days you want and click OK. So what does it do? It takes that number of days that you allocated, and it randomizes the, it creates a scheduled task on the clients and randomizes the client installation behavior in such a way that it doesn't take your servers down. So when what else is recorded here? You can say number of days, and we also record who is the administrator that modified it, and what is the basic base client version that you are specifying. We record all that stuff here, but what you can do, what are you allowed to edit is only the number of days. Let's look at what happens in the back end when you do that. When you go and enable this check mark and said enable client automatic upgrade and give number of days, basically your all of your machines will get a new policy. And what is this policy? It's a classic software distribution policy. So what we did is that in the Configuration Manager SP1, we shipped a hidden package to you guys. So it is sitting in the disabled state when you install the SP1. But once you enable this checkbox, the policy comes to the machine and enables this hidden application. What does this hidden application do? It creates a scheduled task. When it's creating the scheduled task, the schedule of the task is where the randomization happens. So basically, if you give 10 days, so imagine today is 5th, imagine today is 5th. And if you say that I need to upgrade all my clients in 10 days, So that means it will upgrade all the clients before the end of 15th. So it has time from this second to the last second on the 15th day, on the 15th date. It will take all the seconds and randomizes to each second. So it can automatically pick up any second from now to the date of 15th and can create a scheduled task to install your client. That's how the randomization happens. So when the time comes, the scheduled task gets fired and the client gets installed, it uses the last successful parameters. So when you install the Configuration Manager 2012 RTM, you use some parameters to upgrade your client, right? Slash cache size, slash log level. There are a number of parameters that the Configuration Manager client supports. So we record all these last successful parameters in registry key. We read those parameters and use the same parameters that you used last time and upgrade your client. And once the client upgrade is done, we are going to go back and delete the scheduled task so there is no trace of the scheduled task. So in a nutshell, this is how it works. All right, let's see the demo. So, where is the setting? So, if you highlight your central site and go to hierarchy settings and go to the last tab, that's the automatic client upgrade tab, this is a checkbox. And please be aware, this is a hierarchy level setting and you cannot do it per site. And it happens on all the systems. You cannot scope down and say, I want to do this for this collection and stuff. The whole reason is that we will take care of all that randomization. You don't have to worry about, oh, it should go to this batch of clients and stuff. It's not going to pull your server down. We're going to upgrade your entire hierarchy in a fashion. I'm going to show you some graph how it does it and stuff, but we're going to randomize it across the number of days and do it. So let's go ahead and enable it. So what's the number of days we should put for the demo? Let's put 2 days. Okay. And say apply. And okay, that's all. If I have 300,000 clients, it will upgrade all the 300,000 clients in 2 days. So the number what you keep in there is that what you try, because right now you have been doing the configuration manager administrator for a few years, right? So you guys know what your infrastructure can take around. Like, can it take 20,000 clients upgrades per day? Or can it take 10,000 client upgrades per day? You guys already have an idea. So for example, my hierarchy can take 30,000 client upgrades per day while the patching is going on. So because I have 330,000 clients, so I take like 10 days. So anyway, what happens when you enable this thing? So let's see the logs. This is the old software distribution log called Exec Manager. All of you guys are familiar with this log, right? You can see that this already has this policy. That's what I was telling you guys, that we ship this policy along with the SP1, but it's sitting in the disabled state. So my machine did not get the policy yet because we just enabled. It's going to take a few minutes to get the policy. But what it is saying is that I already have the policy, but this policy is in the disabled state. So I cannot do anything about it as of now because it did not get the updated policy. So it's waiting for us to send a client upgrade policy for it, which it's going to come in a minute or two. But before it comes, I want to show you guys the hidden packages that we ship. So if you open the console really quick, if you go to software library, if you go to the application management, this is the packages. You see this configuration manager client package? That's where the entire client bits are. That's the only package you see. But there's one more hidden package here. Client upgrade package. You don't see it in the console. That's a hidden package that I was talking about. And this package is targeted to all the machines in the entire collection. And it is sitting in the disabled state before we enabled it. So let's see if it came down here yet. Not yet. Let's go ahead and trigger the policy refresh if I can. Okay. I open the old way, open the Configuration Manager client and refresh the policies. And now I'm waiting for the policy to come down. So give it a minute. And if you want to see what's going on, we can go. Yeah, see, the policy came, it ran just now. You see, it's a software distribution policy that came down and executed with exit code 0. What does it mean? I told you, we are going to create a schedule task. So let's go and look at the schedule tasks. So this is a schedule task library, right? And this is the configuration manager node in the schedule task library. And if you click on it, right, let me maximize this for you guys. So here is the configuration manager client upgrade task. And it is installing on next runtime, 6/29/2013. So today is 6/27. It's actually in the Redmond time, my server. So it's going to do at Redmond time at 6/29. So we said that do it in 2 days, right? So it randomized it and took 6/29 as the date. So the randomization works till the last second. So it can happen from the time I clicked that to the time it's allocated. It will calculate all the seconds and it randomly picks 1 second. All of you guys might be curious how well this randomization works. You'll be surprised when I show you the graphs that of the 330,000 clients we have at Microsoft. I'm going to show you the graphs. But here is a schedule task that got created. You can see the progress on how this is happening in the ccmsetup.log. So in the ccmsetup.log, all of you guys are familiar with the ccmsetup.log? That's a log good number of people. That's a log we use to track the client installation status. If you go here, here are the two lines which records that it had 2,876 minutes to randomize, and it picked 1 minute. It picked some minute to randomize it, and it happened to be at 6:29, 1 o'clock. So anyway, because we cannot wait till 6:29 to show the demo, let's go ahead and fire the task manually, right? So now we fire the scheduled task, which is supposed to run on that day. Then what happens? We're going to go again into the systemsetup.log. So it's running. So basically, it's trying to upgrade my client right now and see what it came up with. You see this? Client installation will be skipped because the required version of client is already installed. This automatic client upgrade is smarter. If you remember your old classic software distribution of deploying the clients or upgrading the clients to software distribution, that doesn't have a logic to understand that the client is already installed. It brute forces an install each and every time. But the client upgrade is smart. It only upgrades when there is required. If the client, for example, the client on this system is already on the latest version. So this is smart enough to understand that and said that, hey, good, you scheduled it, but you don't need it. It not only checks for that, it also checks for prerequisites. See, it's doing a prerequisite check here. And it understands that, see, if you go on the top, it's looking at the policy platform agent setup, and it also looks at all the prerequisites. It looks at whether the Microsoft XML provider is present or policy platform agent is present. It's going to look at all your prerequisites and checks that whether you have the latest prerequisite or not. If not, it will only install that prerequisite. So that's how this whole thing works.
So basically, if you want to slipstream anything, if the client is already installed, you can also do this through auto client upgrade. So like if the client is there, you want to add some fix or some extra language pack that Dharmendra mentioned or anything kind of a prerequisite. If it needs to be updated, you can easily do that through auto client upgrade.
Right. So let's go back and check a few graphs. These are the results of how the client upgrade is working inside the Microsoft. So this graph was taken when we had 270,000 clients. So right now we're at 330,000 clients. So if you see this, we did, at this particular time, I think for 12 days. So we upgraded the entire hierarchy in 12 days. you see that the number of clients we are doing per day is around 13,000 around 13,500. See how equal it's randomized. If you guys have any doubt on whether the randomization works properly, see it randomized on each day at the equal number of hours or equal number of clients. Does that mean this all these clients get upgraded at one single time on a single day? No, it doesn't happen that way. I told you it's going to randomize till the nth second. So this is the graph. The below is the graph that shows you how many clients are getting installed per hour, or how many clients are projected to be installed. I mean, we cannot say for sure the client will get installed, because if the machine is offline, the scheduled task won't get fired, right? So if you see the below graph, you can see that we are installing at an average of 650 clients per hour. And does it mean that all these clients get installed on that hour exactly? No. It's randomized to the second. So I did not have the graph till how many clients are getting installed per second in an hour because it's too in-depth numbers to portray. But if you look at this hourly graph, you might be confused why the right-hand side of the bar diagram is high and the left-hand side of the bar diagram is low. That's because I took the snapshot of the graph at the 18th hour. And whatever the clients that got installed between 0 to 18th hour, that's what disappearing from there. On the left-hand side, the bar diagram is lower because these are the clients that did not get installed, maybe because they are offline. In the Microsoft, each person has like 5 to 6 machines or 7 machines, so they don't keep all the machines online all the time. So that's the reason why our graph is looking like that. Otherwise, most of the companies outside where people have maybe 1 or 2 machines and most of them are online, you will see much better graphs in your organization. But because I took the graph on the 18th hour, that's why the right-hand side of the graph will give you the projected install numbers per hour, whereas the left-hand side of the graph is giving you what are the leftover clients that did not get installed because they might be offline.
Yeah, we have a lot of groups have the test machines, VMs, built and rebuilt again and again after the testing. So there are a lot of stale records, like, you know. That's why you see a lot of machines offline and unknown in this graph.
All right. So there are a few points that you guys might have doubts on what happens in certain scenarios. So we put notes here for you guys to refer later on. But in a nutshell, if you have a doubt like, hey, I took in the randomization, my scheduled task is scheduled on Sunday, and I'm at home. I opened my laptop on Sunday at home, but I don't have the corporate access. Then what happens? Then the scheduled task fails because we cannot access the distribution point to download the content. So how do we remediate those kind of scenarios? Is that when we reach like 80% of the client upgrade, we turn our software update install on so that we can catch up on all these machines that were failed, were offline, etc. So we don't wait till we go 100% on the automatic client upgrade. Once we reach 80%, you can safely turn on the software update-based installation. And you might have other doubts, right? Can we use this for a CU1 upgrades? No. The automatic client upgrade doesn't support the CU1 or cumulative updates that gets released. It only supports SP1 and above builds for the automatic client upgrade. You cannot use this feature to upgrade from RTM to SP1. But you can use this feature to upgrade from SP1 and above. This feature is part of the SP1, not part of the RTM. That's the reason why you cannot use it to upgrade from RTM to SP1, which most of you guys might be planning to or already did. But for the next release, if you are trying to go and upgrade for R2, you can definitely use this feature because you're already on SP1. You should be on SP1 to use these features. And if your doubt is in the earlier example, we said like today date is 5th and we are talking about 10 days, 15th, but what happens if a guy comes back from vacation on 16th? Are we going to upgrade them immediately? No. What we do is that we take 24 hours, we give 24 hours extra time and say that we randomize you in the next 24 hours and we create a scheduled task for the machines that came after the enforced time so that all of them don't get upgraded at one single date. Or one single time, and then they get randomized across the 24 hours. So these are a few points. You can go through them later on in detail, but these are the few things that we want to, some few gotchas that we want to we want to show here. All right, let's talk about the application management. This is a completely different topic. Has nothing to do with the client upgrades. One of the features we added in the SP1 is the Windows 8 support, right? Windows 8 has different kind of applications. It's called modern applications, Windows 8 applications, right? There's a support in SP1 for that to deploy them and stuff. But there are new kinds of applications. These are not like your traditional MSIs and EXEs. So how do we install these applications inside the Microsoft environment is what we want to cover through. A few things what we want to show here is that in the modern application delivery, if you want to deliver the applications for the Windows RT or Windows Phone or iOS, you need to use the hybrid management. You guys might have attended already a lot of sessions on hybrid management, so I don't want to go through that. But if you want to do the application delivery for these three platforms, you must have a hybrid connection to the Windows Intune. If you want to do only on-premise management of x86 and x64 domain join machines, then you can do without the hybrid connection to the Windows Intune. But either ways, whether you use hybrid connection or if you use on-premise connection, depending upon the scenarios you have, whether if you need to manage the modern devices or not, entire management experience comes from the Configuration Manager console. Reporting is also in the Configuration Manager console. So you don't have to, because you're using a hybrid connection, you don't have to go to somewhere else for the reports or for the management perspective. Everything happens from the Configuration Manager. So what do we support? We support targeting apps, the Windows 8 apps, but we also support targeting deep link apps. You guys might be wondering, what are these deep link apps? Say, the regular apps are your LOB apps. Say, you guys develop modern applications internally. Those are called LOB apps. The deep link apps are the apps that are in the Windows Store. They're already publicly available, but you want to make them available for your users using the application catalog. All of you guys are familiar with the application catalog? Few of you? Okay. So, but if you want to target few of the apps that are available in the Windows public store to the internal application catalog, that's how you do it, using the deep link support.
For example, sir, some of the popular applications like Skype and Link, you don't want to publish them again in your application catalog. So you just deep link them to MS Microsoft Store. So it automatically takes to the Microsoft Store and get those popular apps for users.
All right. So how does this deploying the Windows 8 applications work? As I said earlier, these are not like EXEs and MSIs that you just take and deploy it. The user can't just double click even if you give them this file and just install it. There are some prerequisites you need to do on your systems to make this whole thing possible. So predominantly, we call any app that did not come from the Windows Store, we call it a side loading. Only apps that come from the Windows Store are by default trusted by the machine. Because you know the Windows 8 has this enhancer security, that's a new concept of this all Windows 8 modern app. It runs in its own bubble, it cannot talk to the client. So there's a huge amount of security in the Windows 8 app layer. So that's why by default the operating system only trusts the apps that are coming from the store. But you want to sideload the apps that are developed inside your organization. So you need to do a few management things to make this happen. So this Windows 8 sideloading is split into two. One is the sideloading key activation and sideloading enablement. So there are two things. Depending upon what kind of operating system you are using or what kind of SKU you are using, you have to do those things. So for example, if you're using Enterprise client, Windows 8 Enterprise client SKU, then, and if the machines are domain joined, all you need to do is that deploy a GPO that says allow all trusted apps to install. That will enable the side loading for the machine. That's so simple. But if your Enterprise SKU machines are not domain joined, then you need to activate the side loading key. Apart from putting this GPO policy, because they're not domain joined, you cannot push a GPO policy, but at least you should enable the local policies on the machine. But say, for example, Windows 8 Pro and Windows RT. Windows RT cannot be domain joined, but Windows Pro can be domain joined. It doesn't matter if the Windows Pro is domain joined or not. You still need to have the side loading key activated plus this local policy, what I'm talking about, allow trusted apps to install. So what is the sideloading key activation? Where are you going to get it from? If you're a customer who is having the enterprise agreement, EA agreement with Microsoft, you are going to get this key along with your enterprise agreement. But if you don't have enterprise agreement, you have to buy this key from the Microsoft. If you are using the pro machines in your organization and not the enterprise queue, then you need this special activation key to activate the sideloading key, apart from deploying this GPO policy of allowed all trusted apps to install. If you are having server queues, like Windows Server 2012 and stuff, they must be domain joined. If they're not domain joined, we don't support sideloading at all. They must be domain joined, and they should have this GPO, allow all trusted apps to install. This GPO is for enabling the sideloading. For activation, you need to use the activation key. But activation is not required on the enterprise queue if they're domain joined, and it's not required on the server queues, and they need to be always domain joined. So these are the prerequisites you need to be aware of. So how do we do, how do we build, how do we deploy these apps inside the Microsoft? So obviously our developers are the ones who are going to build the apps. Otherwise, you can have your developers build the apps, or you can outsource somebody to build your apps, or you can get from your ISVs, internet service providers. There are a number of ways to get the Windows 8 apps. So somebody is going to build these apps. This is step one. And then the important step is the step two. So Windows 8 SDK comes with the Windows 8 app certification kit. You must run all these apps through the certification kit, because that's where we check whether there are any schema issues or this app is developed in a fashion that So if you run through certification kit, there's a high chance that your app will not have a failure when it's installing it. That's what the certification kit guarantees, that it's in line with the Windows 8 operating system schema so that it doesn't fail when it is installing it. And then point number three. So I told you the only apps that come from the store are trusted, but these are the sideloading apps. How do you make them trust? So trusting always happens through certificates, right? So in the step three, what we're going to do is that we're going to take that app which passed the certification and then sign it. We are going to sign it with a certificate that is trusted with your root certificate, right? You never sign the apps with your root CA certificates. You're going to sign your app with a certificate that is chained to your root certificate. And one thing to remember, which I'm going to show anyway in my demo, is that when you're signing the apps, inside the app manifest, there is something called publisher. App manifest is an XML file inside your app which has a publisher ID. The publisher ID of the manifest should match with the publisher information in your certificate. Then only the signing happens properly. This is the one point where a lot of mistakes happen normally, and the signing doesn't happen properly. But I'll show you in the demo where you need to look for it and stuff. And then deploy the app using the Configuration Manager 2012 SP1. So these are the four steps that you need to do to deploy a Windows 8 app. So let's look at the demo.
Yep, there is a good amount of interest in within Microsoft in among coders to develop some apps. So they develop a lot of apps on their own, but everyone has to go through the certification process as well as the signing process to deploy those apps to Config Manager. So even if you get an app from your app providers or packaging team, that has to go through the certification and signing process before we deploy through Config Manager.
So I was talking about the GPO that would enable the sideloading. So this is a GPO. It comes part of the Windows 8 ADM templates. It's called allow trusted apps to install. You should set it to enable. So this is the GPO I was talking about when I was describing it. This is the GPO that enables the sideloading. So what happens when this GPO gets applied on the machine? So basically, it's going to create a registry key here in the HKLM software policies, Microsoft Windows APPX, and it's going to put this registry key value, allow trusted apps, to 1. That means your system is enabled for sideloading right now. If you don't set it up, the system won't trust any apps that you try to install. Even though they are signed, it won't trust it because the system is not enabled for sideloading. So this is an important step you need to deploy the GPO. So, and I also said that you need to sign the apps with a certificate that's chained to your root CA. That means you are distributing your root CA to all the machines. Most of you guys might be doing the root CA certificate on your machines already, but if not, you need to create a GPO for that too. Say, for example, internal corporate root. Show all. So this is a certificate I'm deploying to all my machines. This is our internal corporate root CA certificate. Because the system will only trust the app if it knows that it can trust through the certification, through the certificate. So that's the reason why you need to deploy root CA if you guys are not doing it. And also we have some requirements around the root CA that it should be SHA-2 root CA. Please look at the Windows 8 app documentation to understand more in detail about what are the certificate requirements to sign the Windows 8 apps. So what happens when you deploy this certificate? This certificate comes down to, I think I did not open it, but I'm going to open it right now. Let's go to add or remove snap-ins, certificates, computer, next, finish. So if you look at the certificate store, if you look at the trusted root certificate authorities, so here is the certificate that the GPO pushed down the machine. So my machine right now has a root CA certificate which trusts my apps. So that's very important. Otherwise, the system again is going to reject it, saying that, hey, even though the side loading is enabled, but this app is not trusted. So how do you sign these apps? So when your developer or ISV sends you an app, they send you in the form of an APPX file. So what you need to do is you need to take this APPX file and first unpack it. To unpacking it, Windows 8 comes with Windows 8 SDK tools like make appx.exe. So basically what you need to do is that you need to take this command line, let me copy this, and then run it. So basically what we are doing here is that we are unpacking this file. This is make appx.exe unpack. So we are going to unzip that file. Otherwise, this is just one file. You don't know what is there inside it. So when we unzip it, I unzip it into here. So this is the code inside that file. So what you need to do is, before signing it, go get into this appx manifest.xml. This is a manifest.xml I was telling you earlier about. You open this XML, let me maximize it. Now, look for publisher, yeah, here. So normally, when your developer send you the app that they created it, or the ISV sends you an app, it's signed with their dev certificate. I mean, anybody can create a dev certificate using Visual Studio. That's how they do it, because they need to test it. They have a dev certificate. Your developers or your dev team will not have the IT certificate. You never want to give them the IT certificate. Only you want to sign the apps, because you are the distribution authority for the enterprise. Your devs will only have the dev certificate that they got from the Visual Studio. So this publisher information will be to their dev certificate information. So you are going to go and edit this publisher information with the certificate information of yours. So where do you find the information about your certificate? So let's go to one of my apps that are already signed. Let's go to here. Let's see this. Digital signatures. Trying to click on details. Here you go. And then you go and view the certificate. You go to details. And if you go to subject, so here is the publisher information in your certificate. So this name should match with this name. So that's the key. So the information in the certificate should be in the appx.manifest.xml file. Then only if you sign it with that certificate, the signing happens properly. If you leave your dev certificate name inside it and try to sign with your enterprise certificate, it won't work. because the publisher information is different. So anyway, once you go and update it here, then what you need to do, you need to come and repack this, because earlier we unpacked it, right? You have to come and repack it into the APPX file. How do you do it? Again, using this makeappx.exe and pack is the command line. And let's pack it again. So it packed, and we kept it in ctemp. Here, here is the file which we just created it. This is the correct timestamp. So this, you unpacked it, adjusted the publisher name to your certificate right now, and then you need to re-sign it with your certificate. So how do you sign it? I mean, signing has been a same process forever. So all of you guys are familiar with the signtool.exe, who are in the signing department of your company. If you are not familiar, you can ask the certificate authority in your company. They know how to sign the apps. So you have to use the signtool.exe. And make sure you timestamp your apps. Say, for example, I'm passing the parameter slash t here. The advantage of timestamping is that even if your certificate is expired, I mean, all the certificates expire for sure, the app that is signed with a certificate that expired is still valid if it is timestamped when you're signing it. So you should make sure that you sign the app and timestamp it. So this is how the process works. You get an app from your developer. You edit the app and make sure the publisher information is right. And then you unpack, and then you pack the app again. And then you sign it. And then what you do? Now you're going to use the configuration manager. And then you're going to deploy the app. So for the sake of the time, I already deployed this app, MS Auction. If you're wondering how do you deploy this app, create a new application. Go to configuration manager, create a new application. And once you install the service pack 1, you'll get a new option here. Windows APPX file installation. And then you browse to your APPX file, right? And then you give your APPX file, and then click next. It automatically builds all the app for you. And then deploy it to all users if you want to see it in the catalog. And once you target it to all users, it shows up in your catalog like this. So it's my application catalog. I'm presuming all of you guys are familiar with the application catalog. That's the feature we shipped in the Configuration Manager 2012 RTM. This is like a self-serving website where users can go and install the apps. So once you create and deploy the app, it's going to show up in the application catalog. Then the user is going to come here and click on install, like I did. And it's trying to install the app. It's evaluating the requirements right now. I mean, it's making sure that you are the Windows 8 operating system, you have the side-loading key enabled. So there are a number of requirements that the app must pass through for it to get installed. So it may take a minute before it finishes evaluating the requirements, and then starts downloading the content, and then it installs the app. So it says that your application installation has started. That means the downloading of the app will start soon, and then the installation will finish. So we're waiting for the toast. You see the toast notification on the right-hand corner? It says downloading and installing the software. You can click to view the progress, but we don't want to view the progress right now because we know it's a very fast installation of the app. So give it a few seconds. It's going to come back up and show as installed. I'm waiting for it to give me a toast notification showing that it's installed. Or we can go and see whether it's installed or not. It's not yet installed. Oh, there you go. Well, it's the right time. So you see this app that just appeared, MS Auction. This is the app which we try to install. So this is the end-to-end story. And here is a notification that says that software installation is complete. So this is how you deploy the modern apps. You get them, you unpack them, make sure the certificate is right, and you sign them, and you distribute them to the configuration manager. And the users will go to their application catalog and install those apps. So quickly, let's see what we have with the app B. Anybody uses application visualization here in our group? OK, a lot of people. OK, so quick story on app B. All of you guys are aware of that, right? We released AFP 5.0 last year, and the Service Pack 1 has integration with the AFP 5.0, and also we released AFP 4.6 SP2. So why do we need AFP 4.6 SP2? We need 4.6 SP2. If you want to stay on 4.6 version, but you want to support Windows 8, then you need 4.6 SP2. Or you want to migrate to 5.0, then you need 4.6 SP2. Migrate in the sense that you want to coexist. If you want to move to 5.0, you need to resequence your apps. There's a huge migration plan that requires. But in the transition state, if you want to stay, because you cannot, if you have like 200, 300 apps that are virtualized, you cannot overnight turn all of them into 5.0 standard, right? It's a gradual process. So if you want to, in the migration period, if you want both to work, 4.6 apps to work and 5.0 apps to work together in conjunction, then you need 4.6 SP2, because 4.6 SP2 and the 5.0 can coexist with each other. That's the reason why we built 4.6 SP2. And what are the cool features in AFP 5.0? We have features like the connection groups and the virtual environments. Say, in the earlier releases, we always used to have this problem. If two apps that are virtualized need to talk to each other, they were not effectively talking to each other because of the limitations. We solved that problem in the 5.0. What do you mean by two apps talking to each other? Say, for example, example like Outlook and Link. They need to talk to each other because in the Outlook, you can see whether the user is online or not because it's getting the status from Link. If you visualize Office and Link, and if they're not talking to each other, these features in the Outlook won't work. That's one example. And what other examples we have? An application, a plugin. You have an application that's visualized, and it requires a Java plugin. You can visualize both of them and can add them into a connection group. Then there's a channel that's established out of the box so that they can communicate to each other. You know that AFP apps work in their own bubbles, right? So this connection group is a bridge between that bubble so that they can talk to each other. And the other typical example of the apps that require to talk to each other is Visual Studio and .NET. If you visualize both of them, and then if they need to talk to each other, that's a connection group, is a new feature that's available in the 5.0. Apart from these features, 5.0 also gives you better user experience on the way it installs it. It's more native Windows experience rather than what it used to be. So these are the few features that are available. So there's a quick migration story I want to tell you. What the steps we did to migrate from 4.6 to 5.0. So what we did, first we deployed 4.6 SP2 because we want to migrate. And then we started converting slowly. I mean, we don't have a huge app story for 5.0 or AFP for that matter, because we don't have the huge number of applications, but we have few applications. So what we did, first we deployed the 4.6 SP2, and then we started converting slowly packages into 5.0, and then we deployed the 5.0 client via Configuration Manager, AFP 5.0 client, and then we started creating the AFP 5.0 apps in the Configuration Manager. If you have SP1, SP1 enables a different deployment type for the AFP 5.0. You can do 4.6 apps and also 5.0 using the Configuration Manager SP1. And then we superseded these 5.0 apps with the 4.6 apps, right? And then if required, we created these virtual environments or connection groups I was talking about for the 5.0 apps. Then we deployed these apps. So what happens after we deploy this? The apps that are running on the 4.6 will still work. But the apps that got 5.0, the 4.6 app will stop working, and automatically the 5.0 app will start working. So the whole system knows that it can coexist with each other. Once the 5.0 app gets laid down, if there's a 4.6 app for the same app, it will automatically suppress itself, and the 5.0 starts working. In that way, we migrate all the apps from 4.6 to 5.0. And then at the end, when we migrated all the apps to 5.0, we went and uninstalled 4.6 SP2 from our machines. So this is our AFP story we have. And I would like to give it back to Karthik to talk more on the Mac client story we have. Don't be surprised that we have a few Mac clients in Microsoft because we develop Office for Mac. So we have a developer community that uses the Mac clients. So Karthik is going to walk you guys through how do we manage the Mac clients.
Okay. So before we dive into Mac manage Mac client management, I would like to give a heads up that client management is predominantly about Mac Pro machines like Snow Leopard, Mountain, and Lion and Mountain Lion. If you're thinking about iOS like iPad and iPhone and iTouch and everything, that comes under hybrid cloud management model, which is the Windows Intune model. So the Mac management here I'm going to talk about is the on-prem model with the agent kind of talking to the on-prem data center servers, okay, which is part of SP1. So before I talk about how we did the pilot overview, I just want to explain the method that we use. So it just suits for our needs, but it may be different for your environment. The reason that we chose for the on-prem model, and that too, not placing our servers in DMZ, is because most of our Mac devices are not domain joined. So we cannot discover them. We cannot push any client to them or anything. So we chose the user-based enrollment. So user has to take some initiative to run the agent installation, the configuration manager client agent installation. And since it's not a hybrid model, it's not on the cloud, it's totally on the enrollment server, you need to enable an enrollment server site role on your servers. It's a separate site system role. And the Mac device will start communicating to that enrollment server for enrolling the devices. And we kept that enrollment server in the data center on-premise, not on the cloud, just for the security reasons, as well as to, since we don't have many Mac machines, basically, because we just have one small unit, Mac business unit, and we are getting more businesses coming in, like Skype and other acquisitions, having Mac machines. But predominantly, we're going to start with the data center on-prem model. So what are the things that are required for it? It needs a certificate because the client has to communicate. Even with the config manager, Windows client, it needs a certificate, but that's built with the product. But for enrollment of Mac machines, it needs a certificate to be registered on the device. So what kind of certificate is required? We chose to go with the user-based certificate because there is a template that we have to create with all the certificate requirements. We worked very closely with our certificate team. You may want to do that. And then create such a template and have all the security requirements and attributes set up in the template and give access to users for the template so that they can enroll. So the main requirement is to work with your certificate team. The requirements are all documented. You can, in the TechNet site, or you can check what are the things to be required for certificate. And also, since the certificate enrollment, the agent installation, everything is based off users' interest. If users are not interested to really do the installation because if there are too many steps, they won't even participate in the pilot. So we wanted to reduce that. So what we did is we automated everything into a shell script, like all three processes, which I'm going to explain very soon, all three processes into a shell script, and then gave that script to users, and they just downloaded the script and ran the script. The actual installation steps are three parts. One is the agent installation, which is nothing but downloading the bits and running the agent. It doesn't need any server communication, just the client gets installed. But for certificate enrollment, the device has to be connected to the CARPnet through Wi-Fi or wired, but it has to talk to the enrollment server or the CA server. Basically, what it will do is the client will talk to the enrollment server will in turn talk to the certificate server and pull down the user certificate and enroll that on the device. And the third part is machine reboot. It's a must for Mac machines to get rebooted to get the client working. Since these three pieces have to be tied together, we created the script. And we also drove that change and the pain points with our product group, and we got a new GUI, the graphic user interface, to do this seamlessly. Now, within the product, in R2, you're going to get a new GUI, so you don't have to use the script. So that's a legacy model now. No need to use the script. We can use the GUI, which will easily ask users to install the agent as well as enroll the certificate. So we had a couple of applications that we got that are common, like Skype and Skip, which is the forefront endpoint protection, which was before. Now it is system-centered endpoint protection. We packaged that and then sent it via software distribution. Now I want to talk about the three things that are important here for Mac management. One is the inventory. That's part of the feature set. And software distribution. You can deploy softwares to Mac machines. And last is the policy. Say if you want to standardize your Mac machines with some stringent password policy or a screensaver policy, you can do that through compliance and settings management, which is formally called DCM. So these are all the policies that we set, like screensaver time and the password time and the password strength. If you are familiar with Mac machines, there are Mac machines have something called preferences. Those preferences can be set easily with the out-of-box GUI on the console, very easily. But if you want some additional settings that are not that you want to set up, then you can use some script. So it supports both the inbuilt model as well as the script. We do some shell script-based settings management on Mac machines. So what are the key benefits that we got out of that and some takeaways here is we use the on-prem native management, which actually cut down a lot of our network, our complex network architecture, because you don't have to place your servers in DMZ. You don't have to open up the DNS communication. You don't have to create an IP tunneling to make the machines try to talk to the DMZ server over the internet. Everything is on-prem model, so the clients can start communicating when they are connected to CorpNet. And also, we met all the security requirements by using the certificate as well as user-based certificate, which reduced our security because these machines are not domain joined. That's one of the things that I'm mentioning about the item, noteworthy items for Microsoft IT, because Mac machines are not domain joined. So there are some security concerns there. So we actually overcame that by using the stringent security certificate requirements. And also, if you have all your Mac machines not connected to domain, then you can still have the Mac agent bits copied into a boundary server, and we did that, and then users can download that from a SharePoint online site or some other boundary servers. They can easily grab that without even connecting to the domain. And one other important point that I want to mention is you can also modify the client settings through settings management. For example, in Microsoft IT, our customer said when a software distribution goes to a Mac machine, they want at least 2 hours of delay time. They don't want to install that immediately. They want some delay time in there. So we worked through a script. And then, so not through the script, through the settings management and configured the client-based settings through the settings management and configured that. So now all our software distribution on Mac machines will not get installed immediately. We'll give a time to users for around 2 hours. Similarly, the reboot also got delayed from 60 minutes from the immediate reboot time. So you can also leverage such kind of settings, PowerShell script or, sorry, not PowerShell, the shell script or the inbuilt the settings and managements to change even client agent settings on Mac. Okay. And we are onboarding Mac machines from Skype and Mac business units and other acquisitions that we have done. So it's still going on. We haven't got much turnover so far, but we are still onboarding more, in the process of onboarding more Mac machines. With that, I'm going to go to the unified device management, which is Intune-based mobile device management, and how we use that in Microsoft IT. First, the devices that are in scope are Windows RT devices, Windows Phone 8, and iOS. But since we don't have many Android phones and Android applications, LOB applications, we couldn't test much of it, so we considered Android as only the EAS model, which is Exchange Active Sync. So if an Android device connects to Exchange, you can discover the device and then set some policies and then grab some inventory, which is already there in RTM itself. So just to give you some numbers, this is the current number. We have around 5,000 Windows Phone 8 devices enrolled and around 900 RT devices enrolled, and we are still planning to have more and more devices coming in, and we're going to talk about the plan on that. And we have 9 LOB apps for Windows Phone 8. The number is small, but we are going to increase the number very soon because we are in the process of getting all the apps certified and get ready for, because we have a separate certification team within Microsoft, which Dharmendra mentioned. So we are going through the certification process. We are going to get a lot of apps for Windows Phone 8. And for Windows RT, we have around 45 RT apps, and we have a couple of deep linked apps to Microsoft Store, though, so we can get these apps directly from Microsoft Store. For that, you don't need any packaging, anything. Just have to use the link. It's going to go and grab the apps from Microsoft Store. So before I get into the small demo of what how the enrollment and everything looks like, I want to cover some noteworthy items. First, we are, apart from the software distribution and the catalog and everything, we also enforce policies on all these devices through hybrid cloud management, meaning anything that we set on the Exchange Active Sync, like a password policy or PIN policy, we are setting that through hybrid management. And also, you may wonder, like, if a device gets enrolled by hybrid and also discovered by Exchange Active Sync, how does the record going to be looking like? The records get merged, so you will have only one record at a time, whether it's discovered or through enrolled by use through hybrid management. And one other important scenario is, like, with all these devices managed through hybrid, in the console itself, you can do a remote wipe. The admin can do that. We tested that scenario by right-click. You can do the menu options, you can right-click and wipe the device. But there wasn't any business requirement for us to do that, because we don't want to wipe any phone devices accidentally too. So we worked on that, and then we took a measure to control that access through RBAC. So only particular individuals on the admin, the big set of administrators, will have access to wipe, and we are not going to do any wipes on that. And rest of the admins will not even see the menu for wipe. So we can use, if you want, you can block users or administrators to disable wipe option from devices, even from even accidentally. And some things that you wanted, the lessons learned is, like, when we started doing the hybrid management, we got a lot of questions from users. How to enroll? What do we do after the enrollment? How do I get the apps? How do I uninstall, or how do I get out of hybrid management? A lot of questions. So we, after working on that for a week or a couple of weeks, we thought it's not scalable, so we thought of creating the enrollment guides and smart guides. We call it a smart guides, which talks about how to enroll, how to unenroll, how to install an app. All this, we got that everything created. We are going to share that enrollment guide to you guys at the end of the session, so that you can see, and then you may leverage it, because the experience is going to be same for the enrollment, even in your environment, even in your company. And for Helpdesk, when we started onboarding hybrid cloud management for mobile devices, we wanted to expand the support for Helpdesk, right? Because users call Helpdesk, but Helpdesk support guys were not aware of what to do, how to help users. So we created FAQ documents as well as support guides for Helpdesk, and then provisioned that to all Helpdesk people, and also gave training to them to help users. So in case if you are onboarding mobile devices, which is kind of hotcake now, so you may want to consider supporting, training the support people, and also give the documents to them. And right now, as we speak, we are expanding the hybrid management, the mobile device management, broadly. So we are sending user communications through mail, ask them to enroll with instructions how to enroll and everything. So that's why it's keep increasing day by day. And along with the large set of out-of-box reports, in case if you want to show some dashboards and custom reports, you can create that. The data is readily available there in your Config Manager database. But we did create some custom reports and dashboards just to have an idea of what's going on in the hybrid cloud management. I'll just give an example of that. So this is one of the custom reports that we built on a dashboard, like how many Windows Phone 8 devices enroll, how many RT devices enroll, how many iOS devices enroll. We do support iOS, though we don't do the Android devices. iOS devices are still getting enrolled because a lot of users bring their iPads and iPhones and everything. Also, the policy that I mentioned, like password policy and encryption policy that we set up, we also created a custom report to show how, what's the success of that. For example, this is one of the baselines, the settings management baselines for Windows Phone 8 policy. You could see that the success rate and the failure, and a lot of some machines are unknown because they are not even connecting. Users may have shut down the phone or something. Okay. Before we go into the next topic, I'll just quickly go over the demo of how the hybrid management it looks like. Okay, this is 8. Okay, so this, you might have seen this screen in other Intune sessions. So this is where you configure the connection between your on-prem configuration manager to the cloud-based Intune. You have to create an Intune subscription. This is a test lab. This is not an actual reflection of our production environment, but it can give a fair idea about how it looks like. So you create the Intune subscription and then enable various types of platforms. And first, before that, you have to create a user-based collection, discover all users, user-based collection, and then give that collection here, and all the users in this collections will be licensed automatically in Intune. So we discovered all users and then provisioned the license, but that doesn't mean that all users or all devices are enrolled already. The users are still enrolling because as and when we send the communication. So after that, you can select the primary site where the clients need to be, devices need to be talking to, and enable all the platforms. For now, I'm going to show Windows Phone. Windows Phone is enabled here, and you need to provide a certificate the applications are signed. Basically, this is the certificate that needs to be trusted on the phone side. So you need to provide the code signing certificate here. And the application for the company portal. Company portal is the place where you publish all your apps. I will show it in the demo. So you have all your apps for Windows Phone 8. You publish that into the company portal. Users go there and then install apps from there. So that is another app that you have to deploy it and have give that here in the subscription page. Okay. With that, let's quickly see how to enroll. I'm sure if you have attended the Intune sessions any time before, you might have seen this. But for newcomers, I can show that. In Phone, the agent is already inbuilt, which is under Settings Company Apps. Type in the user ID, which is your email address or UPN name, UPN. This is the test user ID and password. So, since it's a lab, I had to enter the server ID. In real world, users don't have to type in that. It's just going to go to the next screen automatically. Just make sure everything is good. So now, at this time, the device is actually trying to connect to the server, meaning Intune server, enrollment side, and then get all the information, certificate, everything, and then try to enroll the device. Yes, it enrolled the device, and as you can see, install the company app is automatically checked in. That means as soon as the enrollment is done, it's going to go and install the company app. Let's give a few seconds to show up. Yep, here we go. So the company portal got installed. It's an app where the users have to log in and see all the apps published. Here, I just have only one app published here for testing purposes. Okay. So, but in reality, when the users log in, they will see all the apps as per the categories too. So you can go through all category and see all the apps, or you can categorize them in Config Manager to show up in different folders. Okay, it's taking time. Okay, we go. So if users go to all, they can see all apps, or they can go to particular folder and see the apps that is under that folder. And for now, I'm just going to install. It's not going to take much time. It's going to take a few seconds to install just the certificate confirmation. And it is installing that app now. And once it is done, it is going to be in the main app folder where you can see and start using the apps. Okay, it's already in the collection, and then you can see Campus Experience already installed here. So this is the experience the users will see once they enroll for applications, right?
We open up for questions.
Okay. Now, quickly, I will go over the Windows RT side to see the, to show whatever Dharmendra mentioned. He mentioned for Windows 8, x86 and 64 machines, he had to do the certificate push through GPO. But for hybrid, for RT, you have to just punch in the certificate on the subscription page, which is going to automatically push the certificate. This is the same certificate that Dharmendra mentioned before for Windows 8 machine desktops. Here, you don't have to do anything. Intune subscription will automatically push the certificate, as well as enable this. Enable the same registry key for sideloading. Plus, it's going to enable the sideloading key too for installing the apps. The key is already created here, and it's going to show. It's going to support all the sideloading of apps. Okay. It's taking a minute. With that, I'm going to go back to the presentation, and then we're going to talk about wake-up proxy, which is an interesting topic about if you are interested in the power management. Okay. So, wake-up proxy is an interesting topic. If you have power management and if you have a lot of machines sleeping and if you have a stringent policy in your power policies, the desktops and machines get into sleep mode very quickly, which is what we do for some Go Green initiative. So we have some stringent policy. So a lot of users cannot remote into the machine because the machines are sleeping. With the wake-up proxy, with the new feature, you go and enable this client agent setting and deploy this to all machines. And once this is deployed, the agents will communicate within the subnet. And whenever a user tries to remote into the machine, it automatically takes that information and wake up the machine so that the user can start using the device. This increases the productivity of the user because a lot of time in Microsoft, users try to test something from home and then they couldn't connect to the machine. With this, they can easily go ahead and enable start up the machine and start working on that remotely from home. So a couple of things that we did, we enabled the agent installation, which is part of the client agent settings. And if you want to go through some VPN settings, you have to give the VPN and the gateway settings here, which is at the bottom on the right-hand screen. And also monitor your network performance before doing it, because go with a small pilot, track your network performance, see everything is good, and then expand it, which is what we did. And then we started to, after the pilot, we did the 16K machines pilot, and we started doing this we are expanding it more and more. And food for thought is at least 3 machines will be awake randomly in your subnet to make this feature work, and also ping should be enabled in your network. These are the 2 things that you have to keep in mind. So we are come to the final stage, and some more additional food for thought, like what are the things that are supported in the Config Manager SP1, and also the reports enhancement, RBAC is now supported on the reports too, as well as if you like the automation, there are like around 400 PowerShell command lines built into this SP1. So if you upgrade your server to SP1, you get all these PowerShell commands which you can use for automation. and also explore some pull distribution point feature to reduce the WAN traffic. And there are some toolkits available to copy your content to all the distribution points. An additional resource, this is what I mentioned, where we have the enrollment guides for all the device types. We are sharing this through SkyDrive. And a couple of EXEs that Dharmendra showed, like APPX EXE and SignTool EXE, there is an article where you can download this for signing process. Yeah, with that, I hope we covered the key objectives, like we're sharing our knowledge for how to use the different features of SP1, Config Manager SP1, with from the knowledge we got over using that in Microsoft IT. And there are some related contents, like what are the other sessions that you can attend related to this. And some more information about our blogs and other information. And this you might have seen already many times in all of the sessions, and I'm skipped through that. And the important thing is evaluate our sessions. And thanks for attending our session, and we appreciate your time and coming and attending our session.